Ever pinch pennies all year for that one family vacation, only to feel the budget blues afterwards? If so, I was just like you. After three vacationless years, I stumbled on credit card rewards travel and cracked the code to amazing vacations that I could actually afford.
Welcome to Wonderland on Points. In this podcast, you will discover how opening credit cards strategically can save you thousands on travel. We're not just dreamers anymore. We're two adventurous moms turning dreams into reality. Join us as we spill all the points and miles secrets.
And contrary to popular belief, you don't have to spend $1 million to earn 1 million points. Traveling on credit card points isn't reserved for those with overflowing bank accounts. It's for everyday people like you and me, learning to turn routine expenses into free travel.
Consider us your points travel guides. This is Wonderland on Points. Let the adventure begin.
Welcome back to Wonderland on Points. I'm your host, Mary Ellen, and our co-host, Joe, is here today. But, Joe, how are you feeling, honey?
Right on cue, I start doing... I start doing my old man cough because that's what I sound like. I sound like I've been smoking for 50 years, but I actually just have flu A, you guys, which is why, well, by the time this comes out, this will have been a few weeks past, but Mary Ellen was kind enough to take our midweek mini during this week when I was sick all by herself because I literally could not talk at that point. I'm finally getting some air out. It doesn't sound very nice, though. And I do have to say that I was going to try to stay silent this whole episode, and that clearly did not happen. And that should come as a surprise to no one who listens to the show.
Well, I'm just glad that you are on the mend. So, everybody, today we are talking with our friend Pat from Points Pat. He went on a pretty awesome backpacking trip through Europe and Southeast Asia. And while we were originally going to maybe talk to him about his whole trip, we really decided as we were talking to him, we just got really into Thailand and Little Vietnam. So this episode is really going to focus on if you'd like to take a trip to Thailand, this one is for sure for you. And just Southeast Asia in general, he has some really great tips and experiences to share. And so I'm excited about this one because we just keep bringing it up. Southeast Asia is affordable. It's a really great place to take a family that maybe you wouldn't think of normally. So it's time to think outside of the box for family vacations because points open up the whole world to us. So before we get into our interview with Pat, we're going to start with just throwing out some flight options to get there on points and miles. And then we're going to hear all about Pat's trip.
Yeah. And everybody needs to remember about Southeast Asia, it is far. So it does take a larger chunk of points than it would say to go to, you know, England. So you do need to plan accordingly, but also not paying out of pocket for these flights to go to these really far off places and then being able to stretch your dollars while you're there because they're so cheap in country. The Hyatt hotels are very, very affordable points wise. Even if you want to stay in cash accommodations like Airbnbs and cover the purchase with Capital One miles, very, very affordable. So this is a really, really good option, in my opinion, just for those thinking outside the box travels. American Airlines is going to be one of your best options for getting over there. JFK to Bangkok for about 37,000 points and $37 in taxes and fees, which is great. If you don't have American Airlines miles and you're okay with paying a little bit higher taxes and fees, you can transfer from American Express, Capital One, or Citi to Etihad for 37,000 points, $260 in taxes and fees. A really interesting option to go from the West Coast because the taxes and fees are really low is Singapore Airlines, and you can transfer from all the major banks to them. It's 42,000 points for an economy seat. It is $15 in taxes and fees.
I love low taxes and fees.
I know, it's the best. And then if you're thinking a little fancy, you can fly American Airlines business class from JFK to Bangkok for 70,000 points and $37 taxes and fees. So, like I said,
that's a good reason to stockpile some AA points.
It's true.
Which is exactly what I've been doing.
You sure have. You could take a really nice romantic trip to Thailand.
I mean, I'm looking more for the family, so I doubt I will be in business class, but I don't know, one direction or the other. I am kind of toying with the idea of, could we make this happen for the whole family in business class? So I've opened multiple AA cards. I still have the Barclays to open. My player two is going to be opening some AA cards. Like, we are truly stockpiling with the sole intention of a Southeast Asia trip. So we'll see what happens, but I am keeping these options in mind.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, Southeast Asia just keeps coming up for us on this podcast, and not even really on purpose. I think it just keeps happening accidentally with the connections that we're making with our guests. So I am pretty enticed by the idea of Southeast Asia in general. And Pat is just fascinating. He's got a great account. This trip is so interesting. There's a lot in here. We're excited for you guys to listen. I'm sorry that I sound like this. Please do not come at us in the reviews because my voice sounds like this, okay? It's not my fault.
And don't come at me for making her record either. They're going to be like, man, Mary Ellen, give you a break.
You did give me a break. This is that I chose to be here today because I love you guys and this podcast is important to me. But I'm going to try. I actually sound, some people might not know that we record our intros after the episode. I sound better. It will be less annoying during the episode than it is now. I think I spent my voice during this episode. I think it's gone.
You're on vocal bed rest from here on out. So you go rest your voice. Everybody, you guys enjoy this interview with Points Pat. We are excited to have our friend Pat. You may know him from TikTok or Instagram as Points Pat. He is here to share about an incredible trip that he took a few years ago, backpacking through Europe and Southeast Asia. He's going to tell us all about it. Welcome, Pat. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been traveling with Points and Miles.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me on. Great to meet everybody here. You know, I guess I could say that I first started off kind of creating content in the Points and Miles world, probably around 2020. But, you know, before that, before I was even actually making the content, was doing it myself and always was kind of like the points guru, if you want to say that, for like my friend group. So
yes,
at the time,
everybody needs that friend.
Exactly. So, you know, at the time, TikTok was really getting pretty big. I think this was late 2019, early 2020. And I think that's when the platform really was starting to grow. And I was just like, well, I'm going to make a video one day and just see how it does. And I think like by the second or third video, I had a video that reached like over 100,000 views about the Amex Platinum card. And after that, it was just like, okay, I'm just going to keep doing this. So was kind of creating content for quite a while. Yeah. My original name actually on the platform for like a year and a half was Travel Hack Pat. So that's what I was on the platform for like a pretty long time. We were just kind of talking about, you know, some of the rules that you got to follow. And that was something that I was told by someone that I partnered with. And they were like, can you change the name? And I was just like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess. So then I changed it to Travel With Pat. That was my name up until, I'd say April of last year, April of 24. And that's kind of like when I officially went all in on the Points Pat, you know, account. And that's when I created my Instagram. That's what it kind of is right now. But yeah, I've had, I'd say around 17, 18 credit cards over the years by the last time that I counted.
Nice.
You know, that's a mix of business, mix of personal cards. And you know, one of the things that I always do is just make sure that I'm getting the most type of value out of those cards, obviously. So I don't keep them all obviously in my wallet. I'm sure you guys don't either. I don't think anybody out there in our world really does, but you know, they're definitely not cards that, I'm canceling or anything like that, or, you know, for lack of a better word, churning them. I'm always keeping the cards if I can utilize the credits, offset the annual fee, and just try to get as much value out of them.
Absolutely. I'm curious, just to go back a little bit to what you said about being the guru of your friends group. Are your friends, were they initially receptive to this? Or were you like trying to tell them and they're like, no, that's a pyramid scheme? Because I want to be a guru, but my friends and family are very skeptical.
Yep. No, it's 100% the latter. You know, I think one of the big things that came out just in the past couple of years is the Bilt MasterCard. And I'm still renting. A lot of my friends are still renting. And for whatever reason, they are still not hopping on board with getting a Bilt card, even though there's no annual fee. Yeah, it's crazy to me. You know, I think there's just a lot of skepticism still about having multiple credit cards. And these are people that already have the Amex Gold, or, you know, they have the Chase Sapphire Preferred, but they don't want to add another credit card to their wallet. You know, I always get the feedback and hear it's just going to ruin my credit score. I don't want to open up another card. And I don't think people understand fully that, you know, it might dip for in the very short term, but it's going to obviously help out in the long term as you get a higher credit line. And as long as you keep utilization low, you know, it's going to be a little bit better. But it's been a tough battle. I'd say out of all of my family and friends, it's my parents that have really been the ones that are hopping on board. And you know, my dad's always texting me about an offer that he sees, asking if it's a good deal. So the immediate family is a lot more receptive, still trying to help the friends out as much as possible. And, you know, just trying to answer any questions that they might have. And you guys probably experience the same issues.
We relate. Yep. It's how this podcast was born. We were like, let's take this to people who care about it.
Yep, exactly.
Because our family doesn't want to hear about it anymore.
They're tired of it.
Yep. Some people just think it's too good to be true. And in reality, it's really not.
Yeah, it's probably the only thing in life that is actually not too good to be true.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's dig into your trip. A couple years ago, you did a backpacking trip through Europe and Southeast Asia. And I'm not going to lie, when you first told me about this trip and I read the list of countries that you went backpacking through, I thought some of these are not traditional. You know, I think of people backpacking through Europe. That's pretty standard, like the place I hear people backpacking through. But I don't think about all of the countries that you went through. So tell us first where you went on this trip, and then tell us a little bit about how you mapped out and planned your trip. Did it have anything to do with where you could get flight deals with points and miles, or what led you to the destinations that you chose?
Totally. So even backing up kind of like before the trip, what really got me into points and miles is just kind of like my love of travel, essentially. And I think that's why a lot of us get into it, right? Summer of 2022, I did backpack Europe. This was like kind of like when I wasn't really too much into, you know, using points for a lot of this. I think I realized that I could use points a lot kind of like past this trip. But I spent about 3 months kind of like backpacking throughout Europe, visited Spain, Italy, Germany, quite a few countries over there overall. 3 months almost was looking at kind of like the Schengen visa all the time, seeing how many days I had left. I think I got to like day 78, 79, and I was just like, all right, it's time to pack up, go back home. But I absolutely loved it. And it was like, how can I do more of this? Like, I met so many amazing people. I stayed at so many different hostels. My friends actually came over and joined me from Denver for a couple weeks out there too. It was phenomenal. And it was always just like, I want to like keep trying to do this. I want to do more. And what I had met a lot of the people at the hostels, they were just telling me how great Southeast Asia is for backpacking and having like a great time, and how easy it actually was to kind of travel around Southeast Asia. At the time, you know, I work remote, so it was like decently easy to kind of like have a time zone difference with Europe. You know, you're traditionally only like 6 hours ahead of the East Coast, but Southeast Asia, a whole different beast.
You're pretty much
almost a whole day ahead. So had to kind of get some logistics sorted. Kind of went on like almost a little of a work sabbatical where it took a couple months off actually of work. You know, was trying to basically research, how can I use all of these points? And I was a points hoarder. I had a lot of points that I just was not using. And I was just like, I want to try to use almost all of them, make this like the most epic trip possible. What can I do to like basically go from January 23 through April of 2023, visit all of these places and fly some incredible airplane seats?
Wild.
Yeah. So was trying to do it, trying to make it work. Fortunately, was able enough to make it work. And the very first one that I kept eyeing, and I went to, I think, the Points Guy Awards in 2022. And I think Singapore Airlines First Class Suites won their best first class award. And I was just like, you know, that sounds fun. How can I book that? And the reason being, I had previously just flown Lufthansa first class and Emirates first class, of course, using points for my Europe trip. Flew the JFK to Milan route over there, Fifth Freedom route, just transferred over points directly to Emirates, booked that seat. Obviously amazing. It's Emirates first class.
Yeah, both very aspirational routes.
Yeah, yeah, it was great. That was a very last minute booking. I think I booked it about 24 hours before. Like, that's the thing with some of these first class seats, as you guys know. So
yes, gotta
be flexible. Yep. And then the Lufthansa first class one, I think Lufthansa typically releases within 14 days. So was able to kind of snag a seat and at least had a week notice. Not a crazy notice, but
oh my gosh. You know,
that was a time where I was just like, okay, it's time to pack my bags up in Europe, get back over to Frankfurt. Was able to experience the Frankfurt first class terminal. Awesome experience. And then flew the 747 back from Frankfurt to Houston in Lufthansa first. And I think that kind of got me hooked. Those are my first, and outside of Singapore, those are my really like probably the only three first class actual seats that I've flown, like international.
Well, you know, go big or go home. You really went for it from the start.
Yeah, yeah. So I did those two. And then that's when it was just like, all right, I want to backpack more. And I also want to try to find like a really, really cool first class seat to fly. So was able to kind of figure out the logistics of timing. And then was actually able to book the Singapore flight probably like 3-4 weeks out.
Wow.
I didn't get Sabre availability, I got to be honest. I wasn't able to get like as
nice
good
price
of a deal.
Tag.
Yeah, I think
Do
it was
you
like,
remember?
It was around 145,000. I think take or few 1,000 off or added on. It was right around that. I think traditional Sabre is 123,000.
Okay, that's not really that much difference.
Yeah, it's really not that much different. So it's not like, you know, I was getting like a horrible deal out of it. I mean, you know, the seat itself is worth, you know, well upwards close to $10,000, I'm sure.
Right.
So for me, it was just like kind of a no brainer. And I had all of these points that were kind of just still sitting there. Transferred my points from American Express over to Singapore to actually go about booking the ticket. And then flew to JFK, kind of risked it. Got there the day of, but I gave myself like a good 6-hour window, went to the TWA hotel, kind of just like hung out for a bit.
Fun.
Yeah. And then they give you access to the Virgin Atlantic clubhouse with Singapore first class suites.
Ooh.
Hilarious. I had my backpack on because I was backpacking and go up to the counter, you know, because this is like the first class counter or whatever. It's like separate.
You don't
from
belong
else.
Here, son.
I didn't look like I belonged there. Yeah, because it was a huge, huge backpack. And they were like, first class. I was like, yep. And then I didn't get a look or anything, but I just thought it was kind of funny, you know, like
yeah. The dichotomy of the backpacker in the first class.
I'm going to stay in hostels for $20 a night, but
yep,
I'm
yep.
in the first class lounge.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. So got that out of the way. Yeah, I mean, the whole flight was just insane. It was amazing.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
where did you flew JFK to Singapore to
Frankfurt.
Start this trip? Oh, to
no,
Frankfurt. I'm
so,
sorry.
Yeah. So I started actually in Europe. So it wasn't that long of a flight, but it was still pretty great. So the original route was JFK to Frankfurt. That was on the A380. So that had the newer first class suites. I think I was looking last week. They don't really fly that. They fly the route still, but they don't have the A380 on the route. So it's kind of like a
okay.
different seat.
So you started in Germany, but give us a quick rundown of all of the countries that you visited, and then we'll go back to Germany.
Yeah. So started off kind of like 2 weeks in Europe overall. Europe was kind of like the starting point of the trip. I really wanted to end up in Southeast Asia, and that's where I wanted to spend the majority of the time. So visited Germany, visited the Czech Republic, visited Italy. And when I say Czech Republic, I just visited Prague. And for Italy, I just visited Rome. Again, I was only in Europe for 2 weeks. After that, went over to Dubai. Had about a 12-hour layover there. So went out, saw the city, didn't necessarily like, you know, stay there overnight or anything. And then it was from Dubai to Singapore. Singapore, just a quick layover. And then ultimately ended up in Thailand. Spent about a month, I think, 6 weeks in Thailand. So that was kind of like where I spent a good amount of time. And then spent about 4 weeks in Vietnam. And then spent about 3 weeks in Japan. And then Japan, luckily, was able to use points again. booking. It was economy, but still was able to, you know, get a flight back home, transferred points directly over to United from Chase, and then booked, it was United directly back to Denver.
Wow. Okay. So did you plan ahead of time, like, these are the places I'm going to go? Or were you making your decisions on where to go next spur of the moment? And also, talk us through, like, especially in Thailand, because that's where you were the bulk of the time. Talk us through, did you map your route through Thailand ahead of time? Like, how does one even begin to conceptualize this kind of trip?
I didn't know. I'm right there with you. I really didn't know. I knew for sure I wanted to go to Thailand. I wanted to go to Vietnam. Outside of that, I didn't really know for sure where I wanted to visit in those countries. I knew I wanted to spend loosely about 4 weeks in Thailand. Of course, I ended up extending because I loved it so much. And I loosely wanted to spend about 4 weeks in Vietnam. Of course, you know, visiting multiple places throughout the countries. Easiest thing that I kind of realized as soon as I flew into Bangkok, so flew in from Singapore directly into Bangkok, checked into the hostel, you know, first question people start asking you is, where are you going next? What's next on your list? This is where I'm going. Like, do you want to join? Do you want to come with?
Wow.
What I found was, like, the backpacking route in Thailand and same kind of thing for Vietnam is pretty much the same thing. Like, everyone's going to the same types of places. Like, obviously, you know, staying at lots of different accommodations, but everyone's kind of following almost a circle in Thailand. And then everyone in Vietnam is kind of either going south to north or north to south. Vietnam, it's funny, if you look at Vietnam on a map, it is very, very skinny. So you can't really do the whole circle there. And people either start in the north in Hanoi or in the south in Ho Chi Minh.
This is blowing my mind just trying to think about all this. So there's, like, a ton of people that actually do this. I think for those of us that are like, you know, moms and have 9-to-5s, it's, like, hard to imagine being able to put everything on pause and go backpacking. I did see in one of your videos on Instagram, it was just like a quick clip of a ferry. I can't even remember. It was definitely an Asian country, but there was, like, a pile of people on the ferry. And I was like, how many people and how many backpacks could be on one ferry at a time? Like, is this a very popular thing that people do that I'm just completely unaware of?
I will say, I think it's a lot more popular with people that are from Europe. So most of the people that I met were, and Australia. So most of the people that I met were from some sort of country in Europe, or they were from Australia. Decent amount of Americans and Canadians there as well, but I think it's just kind of more ingrained in their culture to travel. You know, I think they also seem to have, like, a little bit more flexibility, of course, time off, all that sort of stuff too. So it's easier for them to kind of do this. But to your point, that ferry video that was in Thailand, and I got stuck on that island that the ferry brought me to because the ferry was sold out for, like, the next 3 or 4 days. And I had to just keep booking accommodation night by night, getting on the app every single morning, just seeing if there was, like, a ferry ticket to get back to the mainland. So I went during peak season. Peak season in Thailand is typically, like, January through March. So it was just super, super busy. But best weather. It's not rainy season. It's not raining all the time. It's a little bit more moderate. I mean, Thailand's pretty much always hot. I think moderate for them was, like, mid-80s, low 90s. So still really hot, but not, like, scorching hot.
Anywhere along your journey, did you use points and miles for hotels, or did you pretty much stick to hostels?
I really, really tried to stick to hostels as much as possible, but Hyatt hotels over in Thailand, phenomenal value. So Southeast Asia is relatively affordable in general. So, like, it was really, really easy to kind of, like, stay at hostels, but you get tired of them. I think at the time, you know, I was, like, 25, 26. So, like, see, like, that's kind of, like, you know, middle of the pack. And there's definitely people that are a lot younger. There's definitely people that are a lot older. I get tired of socializing all the time, right? So there was some times where it's just like, I want to book a hotel. I want it to be a nice hotel. I just want to relax, chill. So of course, transferring Chase points over to Hyatt kind of got me my own little, home away from home, where super calm, really nice. You could find some hotels over there starting off at just 5,000 points a night. I mean,
love it.
High in general, phenomenal value. So like, that's what I was trying to do, kind of using points if I did something looking at a hotel.
For sure. Can you remember any of the specific Hyatts and like where they were? Just if our listeners were like, a lot of them probably aren't going to be able to backpack because we've got a totally. Lot of families that listen, but maybe they want to visit Thailand. Were there particular cities and particular Hyatts that you really liked that you would recommend?
Yeah, I think it was actually just the Hyatt Regency. So yeah.
In Bangkok?
Hyatt Regency in Bangkok. Yep.
Do you remember about where the points started?
So the Hyatt Regency is 12,000 points a night.
Amazing.
Okay, guys, we're going to pull up. Let's give you some examples of some great Hyatt options in Thailand in case anybody wants to take their family or, you know, do a great Thailand trip, because Pat is right. It's so affordable in Southeast Asia. There's an Andaz Pattaya that's a Category 4, which Category 4 is a beautiful thing because you can use a free night certificate for a 1 through 4. Starts at 12,000 points per night. Love that. There is some great Hyatt Regencies. If you go to the Hyatt app and you pull up, just search Thailand, you are going to see some beautiful properties for 9,000 points per night, 12,000 points per night. I mean, these are a steal. So maybe Southeast Asia isn't on your radar always as a place for your family to visit, but it just might be if you do some investigating on the Hyatt app.
How did you feel about like the general safety and then just getting around? Were you doing a lot of this on foot? Are you using means of transportation to get from place to place? Like, is it truly like backpacking as in just walking everywhere you go?
No, not just walking everywhere. I'm not that type of backpacker. I'm still flying or taking a train or, you know, taking a bus, whatever it might be. Just kind of like whatever's easiest. Mm-hmm. Very, very safe pretty much in every single country that I visited. Thailand is notoriously known for being one of the safest countries in Southeast Asia. And everyone was so, so nice. Like every single local that I met was just like one of the nicest people. One guy even drove me all the way. Like it was a 2-hour drive. We were just like walking around and I was trying to figure out a way to get back to the airport. And, I started kind of like having this conversation with this guy for like 30, 45 minutes. He's like, yeah, if you pay me like $20, like I'll drive you 2 hours back to the airport. I was like, oh, that's really nice. Cause I was again, kind of like, it's so busy in Thailand in January and in February. It's like you really have to book everything in advance. This is my first time there, so I didn't know. And every shuttle was sold out. Everything was sold. It was just madness. So I was just trying to figure out any way I can to, you know, still keep my same itinerary. If you do go to Thailand, definitely recommend booking in advance. Especially, you know, even if you're like staying at hotels, shuttles, whatever it might be, like book everything in advance if you're going in January or February. Outside of that, you probably do have a little bit more of a leeway. But that's typically, you know, the busiest season for pretty much anybody going to the country.
No, that's a very good tip. How is the language barrier?
For the most part, lots of people over there speak English. I actually had more of a language barrier when I visited Vietnam and Japan. Thailand was probably the most English friendly.
That's very, very good to know.
Did you ride the train? There's a train that I've seen on TV shows and whatnot that has a train that goes right through a market where people like fold out all the market stuff that they sell all the way up until like right at the train track. It is a wild train.
Yes.
If you ever have seen this video, it's
Are you talking
scary.
About the one in Vietnam?
Oh, that's Vietnam, not Thailand.
I did do that though. Yeah, I didn't ride
did?
It, but they have it. They close it. They close the street off. They open the street off. Like it's kind of just random for like when it will be open or when it won't. Because there's lots of cafes that are like right by the train tracks. So you could kind of go there. You know, you get a coffee, get a drink or whatever it is. Sit down, and then the train like it starts going up really slow, and then like all of the shopkeepers like they pick up their chairs, like to your point, you know, they're putting them in and like they're telling everybody like stand up like this. So we're just standing up and like the train is just going by you like probably no more than like let's say 16, 18 inches away from you. It's going slow, right? So it's not like super dangerous, but it's still just crazy that that's even a thing. It's honestly almost cooler to like look down at it because they have like kind of like some rooftop places where you can just kind of like look down and just see how close it is to people. So would recommend probably that if you ever are in Vietnam.
This is one of my like nerdy mom things because I had a son, my son went through many years of being deep into trains. I mean, hardcore into trains. I watched so many shows about trains around the world that one sticks out. But okay, that's good to know. That's in Vietnam. Let's go back to Thailand though. Did you have any wow moments in Thailand? Some place or thing that you visited that just really blew you away?
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that my favorite place in Thailand that I visited was probably on the west side of Thailand. It's a place called Krabi. It was kind of like the starting point, essentially, to visiting all of these islands on the left side. So like Raleigh Beach is over there, which is probably like one of the most famous beaches in Thailand. And then Maya Bay as well. Maya Bay is probably like, if you Google Thailand, most of the time you're going to see a picture of Maya Bay that pops up. So it was made famous in Leonardo DiCaprio's movie The Beach. If you've ever seen it, that's actually where it takes place, is Maya Bay. And unbelievable. You used to be able to swim in the bay, I guess. Nowadays, they do have it kind of like closed off just because it was so overcrowded. Again, can't say enough things. Thailand's crowded. I was surprised. It just gets really crowded. So they have it like kind of like closed off. If you can kind of get the trip over to Maya Bay, 100% recommend going there. Absolutely beautiful. And then the islands on the Gulf side, I really like the islands in Thailand. It's just, it's so unique because you have all of these, like, you know, it's so green, all of these rocks just kind of like coming out of the water. It's someplace that like I've never really seen before. And it's just all around beautiful.
It's amazing. I've seen so many pictures and videos of Thailand and it like doesn't look real. It looks like AI made it so blue, so green, like just so much color and vibrance. Anything food wise in Thailand that people shouldn't miss?
I mean, you can't go wrong with pad Thai. I know that's like, you know, so generic, but that's definitely something that I was eating a lot of. And then they have like a really, really great dessert, mango sticky rice. Oh my God. I thought it was like really weird, like to try. And then I tried it and it is amazing. It's like, kind of like coconut rice, mango on top, super sweet. You wouldn't think those mix well together, but you'd be surprised. So mango sticky rice. Oh my God.
How close is our pad Thai to actual authentic pad Thai? You know, like a lot of Mexican restaurants here, they're more Tex-Mex or they're Americanized. Yeah. You know, when if someone loves Thai food here, how far off are we from some authentic places?
Depends on the restaurant, of course. Some are definitely better than others. I'd say Thailand knows how to do it a little bit better, just obviously, of course.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some good ones here and there. The food
we like
there
it here, we'll probably like it there.
Yeah, I'd say so. You'll like it a little bit more over there.
I don't think I'd be able to come back and eat it here. There's nothing I love more than Thai green curry. Nothing. In fact, that sounds really good right now while I'm sick. Maybe I need to get some for lunch. let's talk a little bit about like logistics in Thailand or Southeast Asia in general. First of all, can you use the American dollar or do you need to get their currency? And then like what is costs in terms of food, trains, ferries, transportation, all that kind of stuff? Kind of give us some things that people would need to know to be prepared to visit.
Yep. So I know this is a, you know, points, credit cards podcast. I will say Southeast Asia, at least when I went in 23, very cash heavy.
Yeah.
You got to have cash and learn that kind of the hard way. You know, there was a couple times out where I didn't necessarily have enough cash. I had to walk over to the ATM, get it out because there's a lot of places that still don't take credit card, which is unfortunate.
Good to know.
I will say if you're like ever in a pinch and need to go to an ATM and figure out where one is, 7-Elevens are crazy in Thailand and they are so good. Like they have amazing food. I am not kidding. I probably ate at 7-Eleven like for breakfast multiple times while I was there. Of course, you know, I'm there for 6 weeks. So I'm trying to like, you know, stretch my money as far as it can go. But the 7-Elevens, like there's a lot of different stuff over there than there is kind of like in the US. Japan's, you know, kind of the same way. But if we're talking about Thailand and Vietnam, definitely affordable. Vietnam's a little bit more affordable than Thailand. In terms of, you know, kind of, I guess, average spending, you know, you can go out to a dinner, probably spend, let's say, like $12 to $15. That'll include like a drink or two. It also will include kind of like the full entree, appetizer, like whatever it is. At my first meal in Bangkok, I sat down, got a pad thai, water, a beer. It was $6. And this was a heaping serving of pad thai. It wasn't like anything small. So, you know, it's a lot more affordable. And I'd say if you're looking at kind of like ferry tickets, probably like anywhere between like $12 to $15, I think, would have to kind of quote me on that. But everything there is relatively affordable. Honestly, the most expensive thing was the flights. I wasn't taking a train or busing everywhere. You know, there were a couple flights that I did take, even just kind of like within the country. Thai Airways, you could book Thai on United, I believe, which is what I did, I think, twice, because I went all the way up to the north of Thailand, and that's kind of a hike to get to. So tried to use points when I could for that type of stuff, and then everything else, just because it's a little bit more affordable, I was kind of like using cash.
Is it a tipping culture, or is it like Japan where you don't tip? And then the other question I thought of is, what did you do for water? Like, do you have a filtering water bottle? Is the water safe to drink? Do you need to buy bottled water everywhere you go?
Hey guys, we're going to get right back to the rest of this episode. But before we do, we have a request.
Look, if you've ever gotten any value from this show and you want it to continue to grow and to continue to serve you and have access to knowledgeable guests, if you could leave us a rating and a review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, that would be completely amazing.
These ratings and reviews go such a long way into attracting new podcast listeners and helping us bring guests on the show. It makes us so excited to hear how we are helping all of you reach your travel goals.
It really does. And if you're feeling up to it, take a screenshot of your review after you post it and share it to your own Instagram. And don't forget to tag us at Wonderland on Points Podcast. We would love to reshare it in our own stories.
Yes, we sure would. And if you haven't already, go ahead and leave that rating and a review right now. Okay, let's get back to the show.
Yeah. So on the water piece, I always kind of bottled water. And then like there'll be some restaurants and like especially at some hotels and hostels where they'll have like a water filling station. So I would just refill that water bottle up. I never drank from the tap. Don't know for sure if you can or can't. Typically, like I try to always just use some sort of filtered option. So would recommend, you know, bringing your own water bottle if it's like, you know, a metal one or whatever. And there'll be plenty of places to fill that if you need to. If not, you know, readily available at kind of like a convenience store. Again, 7-Elevens are great. And then, sorry, what was your other question?
Oh, tipping culture. I was just thinking about your $6 meal and wondering if it's common to tip.
I'd say not really, honestly. It's still not really common to tip. I know I think it's getting a little bit more popular over in some countries in Europe, but Thailand, I didn't really tip a whole lot. I think if there were like, for example, that person that drove me the 2 hours to the airport, I did tip him, but regularly out at meals, I wasn't really tipping.
This is great for people to know because truly, if you are utilizing your points and miles to get over there, and you can probably set a cash budget ahead of time that will get you very far within the actual country and allow you to do a ton of things.
I just actually helped some of my friends are kind of going over there for their honeymoon. And that is exactly what I told them. I was like, let's find like some great airplane seats to get over there. You know, use your points to maybe stay at some Hyatt hotels. But for everything else, like it's really relatively affordable compared to the U.S. So yeah, your money's going to stretch a little bit further over there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Are there any, I mean, you told us your favorite kind of places. Are there any activities or landmarks to visit that you think that people should hit?
Absolutely. So Thailand is a really hot spot for scuba diving, which Ooh. I was actually surprised to learn. So there's an island that I went to called Koh Tao. Koh Tao is in the Gulf side. And one of the things that pretty much everyone was doing there, whether or not, you know, you were backpacking or you were staying at like a 5-star luxury resort, everyone was trying to scuba dive while they were there. Wow. Reason for that is it's actually one of the cheapest costs like anywhere in the world to get certified. So they have, I think they have both SSI and PADI, but people would literally go to Thailand and get certified for their entire family just because it is like hundreds, if not thousands of dollars, potentially cheaper doing it over there in Koh Tao than, you know, doing it in California or Florida or whatever.
Wow.
Of course, you're making a whole trip out of it too. So maybe that's not the whole reason, but just kind of like a value add. So scuba diving was awesome. And then, of course, you know, some people see Thailand and they think of elephants, right? Elephants are roaming rampantly throughout the north of Thailand. Not maybe as many as there used to be, of course. So there are a lot of places that are kind of sanctuaries for them nowadays. One thing I do have to say is that not all of them are as ethical as they say, right?
Yes.
So you really got to do your research, really got to try to find one that's more ethical and more of a rescue place for these than ones that are just kind of keeping them in captivity.
Yes.
So there's really two that I recommend. These are going to be in the north of the country in Chiang Mai. The two that pretty much are the most ethical based on all the research that I did, as well as everybody that went to these sanctuaries that I was hanging out with. Elephant Nature Park, that is probably the most famous one in Thailand. The second one is Elephant Rescue Park. I tried to go to Nature Park, again, sold out for days, really, really just got to book things in advance. I did go to Elephant Rescue Park. You know, every review that I saw, and if you Google them right now, you're seeing like a 4.9. No one's talking about anything bad on either of these for the most part. Just got to make sure you're doing your research. And those are the two that I would recommend for anybody visiting.
That's awesome. I mean, that would definitely be a bucket list thing for me for sure. I love elephants. But yeah, you do have to be careful with all kinds of quote unquote animal rescue places, because there's many places that are just profiting off of the animals, not treating them well, keeping them captive. It's a big soapbox for me. If you were going to recommend one place to stay in Thailand where people could day trip to various of maybe the locations that you've mentioned, but don't necessarily have time or 6 weeks to travel to other places within Thailand, like where would you say is a good central spot to stay to visit lots of the other places?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with two. Okay. So they're going to be, one's going to be on one side of the country, one's going to be on the other. So you can kind of like pick and choose. So I would say Koh Samui is a very, very big hotspot for people that are visiting the country. That is in the Gulf of Thailand. It's an island. And it's relatively easy to travel to Koh Tao, to travel to Koh Phangan. Those are kind of like the three main islands on the Gulf a lot of people visit. Koh Samui, that is, of course, where The White Lotus is being filmed. So that is actually at a Four Seasons resort in Koh Samui right now. Season three is kind of being filmed there and everything. So that's kind of a hot spot on the Gulf. Really great to kind of get there. And lots of flights kind of daily from Bangkok, from Singapore, from wherever you might be flying into from the U.S. Pretty easy to get to Koh Samui.
Okay.
Flip side of that, other side of the country, would definitely recommend staying likely in Krabi. So you may have heard of like Phuket before. That's kind of like one of the big hot spots in Thailand too. I didn't necessarily travel there. I was just kind of like, you know, doing a lot of research and talking with people, and they personally told me that they really liked the Krabi area a little bit better. Krabi is west side. It's very, very easy to access many of the islands over there. So Krabi, you can visit the PP Islands. You could visit Maya Bay. You could visit Onang Beach, Raleigh Beach. So those two areas between Koh Samui and Krabi will kind of have you covered basically on both sides.
That is perfect. That's perfect. Maybe split your trip in half and do half in each place if you have enough
exactly.
time.
Exactly. Yep.
I love it.
This is really random. Maybe this shows my ignorance, but did you ride in a rickshaw? Is that what they have, a rickshaw to take you around?
Like
or
a tuk-tuk.
Am I in Vien? A tuk-tuk.
Yeah.
That's a different word. Why did I not have that word?
They have them in Bangkok. I didn't see too many outside of Bangkok, but I did ride in them. Yeah.
Is it just a touristy thing, or do people legitimately use them in Bangkok?
I think both, but probably does skew a little bit more towards tourists, if I'm being honest. Yeah. One thing for transportation, would definitely recommend downloading an app called Grab. Grab is basically their Uber, That was the easiest way to kind of like hail a taxi or whatever it might be. So if you are going to Thailand, would definitely recommend downloading Grab.
That's very good to know. Mary Ellen, don't feel bad. I just Googled it, rickshaw versus tuk-tuk, and they're very similar. Apparently a tuk-tuk is just more compact and maneuverable.
A lot more fun.
Good to know. I didn't even know
it
that.
It does. Yeah. A rickshaw is a real thing. The word is correct. It's just a little bit of a bigger contraption. I'm looking at pictures right now.
Okay.
So there you go.
They did it on The Amazing Race. I feel like most of my experiences or vision are like episodes I've seen of The Amazing Race.
That's funny.
Okay, let's circle back to Vietnam a little bit. Where did you start your travels through Vietnam and where did you finish?
Yeah, so for Vietnam, I flew in from, I think it was Chiang Mai, directly into Ho Chi Minh City, which is in the south. Was there for probably like 2 days, 3 days. I will say like the traffic in Vietnam is a lot more intense than the traffic in Thailand, which I thought would be relatively similar, but the traffic in Vietnam was just absolutely crazy. The reason for that, all the motorbikes, tons and tons and tons of motorbikes. So started in Ho Chi Minh City, kind of like traveled up to a couple places, stopped here and there in cities like Da Lat, Nha Trang, Hoi An, which was actually probably like one of my favorite places in Vietnam. So if you are going to Vietnam ever, recommend probably stopping there too. Most people that I met that were also backpacking or just regular tourists, they were also kind of doing this whole route. Obviously, it's such a remote and far place to kind of get to. People are trying to visit, you know, as much as they can throughout the whole country. Vietnam was the very first place that I tried a sleeper bus. And the sleeper buses over there, it's, you can get really, really luxurious. It's crazy. These things kind of like, really? Look like a limo. Yeah, we're not talking like a bus like you probably think of in the US. We're talking like almost like a limousine. And it's all of these like funky little, you know, like dorm beds kind of on a bus. That's almost like the only way that you can actually travel to a lot of these places. So if you want to avoid that, you're looking at probably like a 2-3 hour taxi ride anyways. So the bus routes is kind of like what you got to do no matter what type of travel that you're looking at. And you could book different levels of these sleeper buses. They have like an entry, like a VIP, a super VIP. And like, it just gets crazier and crazier. And I never thought that they could do all of this on a bus, but they did it. Hoi An was a pretty big spot that I visited. Da Nang as well. And then from Da Nang, I flew up north to Hanoi, which I'd say is probably my second favorite spot that I visited in Vietnam. So it was Hoi An and then Hanoi. And then Hanoi, I kind of did like this motorbiking path. I didn't actually drive it or anything. I wish I drove it. I didn't. I just kind of like sat on the back. But it's a very popular thing that people are kind of like doing while you're up in the north. It's called the Haizhong Loop.
That's very cool. I do want to let all of our listeners know that I pulled up Vietnam on the Hyatt app while you were talking. You mentioned Da Nang specifically. There's a Hyatt Regency Da Nang Resort and Spa that looks pretty freaking amazing. It's a category 4. It starts at 15,000 points a night and it looks awesome. And there's also a Park Hyatt Saigon that starts at 20,000 points. So just some options in Vietnam for you. Hyatt people.
How is the food in Vietnam compared to Thailand?
It's very different, actually. You know, even though they're relatively close to one another, you know, you're going to get a lot of different kind of like taste and styles over there. You know, the big one over there is definitely, I always say it, pho, pho. I don't know ever how you
say
it so differently.
I think,
right?
Well, I don't know how to say it either. Pho is what it is in my mind.
That's what I would always think too. But I think people, like, it's like 50-50.
I thought I heard it's like pho.
Pho, yeah. Pho, pho. Yeah, it's one of those.
Because there is a restaurant that was named that word and then off, and it was supposed to sound like an expletive.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And they said the only way people would get it is if they pronounced it correctly. So that's what I always think of when I'm trying to figure out how to pronounce it.
Good to know.
Off on that, but
I saw
that.
You might be right, because I feel like I have heard that like quite a bit. So yeah, that probably is a way to say it. Yeah, pho was really good. Banh mi was really, really good. Banh mi is kind of like one of their like sandwiches, essentially. Those are the two things that I kind of like tried a lot of. And yeah, if I'm going food preference, I'm going to give it to Thailand. I, you know, for me, I think there's just a lot more options and variety over there. Still really like Vietnamese food, but I just love Thai food in general.
Would you say, I know you went as a solo traveler, okay, young guy in your 20s, so maybe this was not on your radar, but for a lot of our listeners, we have a lot of family listeners, is either of those countries, do you think, a better option for families or about the same? If a family was planning a trip and they just could only choose either Thailand or Vietnam, do you skew one way or the other that might be better for them?
Yeah, I'd say that Thailand is just easier. So I think I'm going to definitely kind of skew it a little bit more towards Thailand. Also, a huge thing, when I went to Vietnam, I need to check if this is still accurate or not. I had to get a visa. So that's a whole nother barrier to entry compared to Thailand, which, you know, you don't need a visa to travel there from the U.S. So it was an e-visa for Vietnam, but I still had to wait a couple days to see if I was approved. Don't know if that's still a thing. Again, that was in 2020, so might just want to double check. But Thailand in general, very, very easy. There were a lot of families that I saw every place that I was going to. And it's relatively easy to travel into Thailand. Like, if you're obviously flying over there anyways, you know, there's a lot of connecting flights from Singapore, which is kind of like, that's the honeymoon that I help my friends out with points. They're flying to Singapore first, and then, you know, they're kind of booking their Singapore flight to Thailand. So Thailand's definitely going to win hands down for families, in my opinion.
That's great.
Awesome.
How about you give our listeners the top three pieces of advice that you would tell people in this hobby, like a beginner and then like one or two intermediate or advanced?
Okay. Yeah. All right. So beginner tip, you know, the number one thing that I always, always tell people is you kind of just got to stay flexible. I know it's very tough depending on where you are at in life. But if you really, really want to fly the business class seats or the first class seats, you can't really look at a flight from one specific city to a specific city on a specific date. Even if you're just looking at making things a little bit more flexible, and instead of flying out of, let's say, JFK, maybe you're flying out of Dulles instead. There might be seats there.
Oop, shout out Dulles.
That's where she is.
Yeah, that's typically what I see though, right? I mean, like, it's one of those things where it's just like, don't just look from one city to another city and try to use points just for that. Like, open it up. Like, a cheap flight from like New York down to Washington, D.C. might be like 40, 50 bucks. And if you could find five business class seats from Dulles to that city, 100% do it. I think that's where people get stuck with. It's like, I can't use my points because I can't fly from, you know, A to B. Just open it up maybe from C to B, and then you might have a way better chance of actually finding it.
Amen.
If you're looking at intermediate, I would definitely, this is where if you're looking at, you know, specific types of transfer partners, right? So in our world, and I'm sure like we're all very well aware that if you want to fly, you know, Delta or KLM or Air France, you know, you should probably be looking at like a Virgin Atlantic for something like this, typically going to give you a really good rate. So just checking out all the different types of transfer partners, because you never know, Flying Blue might actually have more award availability than Virgin Atlantic is offering for a KLM or an Air France flight. So it's learning the alliances. That's like probably the biggest thing that I always tell people is like, if you want to get really good at this, learn the airline alliances, learn who's in the Star Alliance, learn who's in Oneworld, learn who is in, you know, SkyTeam. What you want to do there is like, you can then kind of decide, well, I live in a SkyTeam hub. I don't want to transfer my points over to Delta because Delta's not really a good value. How can I still maybe book this Delta flight? Like, look at Flying Blue, look at Virgin Atlantic, just kind of see like what they're offering. I love Virgin Atlantic. It's a great, great program nowadays, especially since they switched over to dynamic award pricing. Like, cannot say enough good things about Virgin Atlantic. It's arguably probably like one of my top two, top three favorite programs out there.
Yes.
And then if you're
keep throwing out these transfer bonuses at us.
It's crazy. Yeah. So that's like, you know, that goes along with it. Like, try to find something that you've been maybe looking at and planning on for a while. If there's a transfer bonus, take advantage of it. I always say don't transfer points over speculatively. Like, if you do transfer, find the award availability first, then transfer the points, and then book it immediately.
Yes.
I get the questions all the time, and I'm sure you guys too. It's like, should I do this transfer bonus if I'm just like going to keep my points over there? Don't do it. Yeah, you don't want to do it. Devaluations happen all the time. So, expert tip. So, shout out to my absolute favorite tool, Seats.Aero. Like, I'm sure you guys kind of use it as well. Like, once you really, really learn how to kind of like get in there, mess with the UI a little bit, your chances of finding a seat open up so immensely, because you could literally sort by business class from any city in the US to Europe. And you can kind of be a little bit more flexible for like where you're actually flying to find four seats, five seats, or whatever it might be for a family. So that's the easiest tool from like what I've actually seen as far as like all of them out there. There's a lot of other great ones too, but my personal favorite, Seats.Aero. Once you kind of get into it, start using it. And I think the paid version is like 10 bucks a month. Totally worth it if you're doing any sort of researching for a trip that's past kind of like that 60 days, which I think is what the free version offers.
That's what I was going to ask, if you pay for the premium version. So
yeah, I pay for it. Yep.
Those were great tips.
Okay, Pau, leave us with, where are you going this year? Where are points taking you in 2025?
Yeah, I am really, really actually hoping to get back over to either Thailand or Japan. I think those are two spots like I haven't visited since my backpacking trip a couple years ago. Really, really high on the radar to kind of revisit. My girlfriend and I both kind of like want to go together. Just going to depend on how we're going to do it. Always kind of checking and seeing if like ANA is out there or JL is out there.
Okay.
We don't really know when we're going yet. So kind of leaving it open to be a little bit more flexible. That's also like a really great tip too, right? So like maybe don't put your PTO request in just yet. Just see if you can find two seats, maybe a couple months out, and then put your PTO request in, you know, after you maybe book them. No, that's not applicable for everybody. Maybe you got to like, you know, be solidly down with the PTO request before, but you know, I'm sure like if you book it a couple months out, your manager probably should be approving that. So
I hope allows me to be healthy when my kids leave the house, because boy, do I have plans when I become an empty nester. I think that's my next window of opportunity for freedom and flexibility in travel. So hopefully I'm still ready to go at that point.
Totally get it.
I still have like this dream that I'm just going to take a week off and have no idea where I'm going. And then
me too.
See what business class is available last minute and then just book it.
That's the best way to do it. Yeah, it really is. It makes it so easy. I mean, you can even find like probably some great seats like Emirates First or, you know, Emirates Business. Like, yeah, like
when you do think that's going to happen. We're going to make that happen. I feel like that's a more attainable goal. Maybe I can't do months long trip, you know, in the phase of life of having children in the house, but blocking off that week for a last minute crazy trip, that's something that I want to do.
Yeah, I'd say Emirates First Class is still my favorite. Even after trying Singapore Airlines First Class Suites, doing the 747 on Lufthansa from Frankfurt, Emirates First Class, A380, you get the shower, the onboard bar, like probably the best experience in the sky that I've flown so far.
Yeah.
Now, there's a couple other cool seats out there, but it's going to be really tough to kind of top that one.
Do you think it's worth it to take that flight just to take the flight? Like, because I've known people who do it and then just go back home and don't even stay wherever they flew to. Is that something that you think is that cool that it's worth doing that?
1,000%. I almost did that again 2 weeks ago. Yeah, I was going to do that because I had to be back for work. But there was a seat that was open on like a Saturday night. And I was just like, well, this would be fun to do maybe. Like, because that's the thing.
Just a regular Saturday night.
It's very tough to kind of book. So like when you do see the seats that pop up, they're always within just a couple days. So you got to be quick. But yeah, that flight is like a whole vacation in itself.
That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Pat. Tell everybody, remind everybody where they can find you on Instagram, TikTok, or anywhere, any other social media platforms. And then leave us with maybe one other creator that you really enjoy following and learning from.
Yeah, of course. So you guys can find me at Points Pat. I'm on TikTok, Instagram, also on YouTube and Facebook as well. So any of those platforms, feel free to follow me over there. Would love that. And, you know, creators that I followed since the beginning, Raimi Travels is great. She's got a lot of awesome tips out there. And then Max Miles Points, you know, he's definitely amazing when it comes to getting straight to the point on all of the things that he's talking about. Cannot say enough good things about their content.
Absolutely. Awesome. We're going to link them in the show notes. Obviously, Raimi's a friend of the pod. We've had her on, you guys, but maybe we got to refresh that because it's been almost a year now. And we're going to link all of your pages in the show notes as well, so people can very easily find you and follow you. Everybody go follow Pat. Thank you so much for joining us today and putting up with me sounding like I smoke 3 packs a day.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Really, really hope you feel better too.
Thank you. I'll be fine.
Bye, guys. We'll see you next time.
If you enjoyed this show today, please consider writing us a review or clicking 5 stars wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please subscribe and follow along so that you never miss an episode.
You can follow the podcast on Instagram or YouTube at Wonderland on Points Podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Family Travel for the Win with the number 4.
And you can find me on Instagram at Points to Wonderland.
If you're thinking about getting a new travel rewards credit card, consider using the links in our show notes. Using our links helps to support us and keep our podcast going so we can provide you with all the latest tips and tricks when it comes to traveling on points.
And if you aren't sure which card is right for you, shoot us an email at wonderlandonpoints@gmail.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you here next time.